Hello and welcome to another episode of eDiscovery Chicks, the podcast about all things eDiscovery and legal tech, hosted by two gals who are feeling very empowered and valuable in the age of AI. We're your hosts. That's Bree.
And that's Angie. We are excited to come to you today to talk about everyone's favorite topic of AI. And I cannot wait to have this conversation with you in particular, Angie, because you are the AI queen. So
I feel like a nerd. Let's see. This is a fun game to play. What things have you asked ChatGPT this week?
Oh, no. I remember the last time you answered this question. I'm scared to know what your answer is today. Actually, I've been talking a lot to ChatGPT about we have a road trip that we're planning from Texas to Santa Fe, New Mexico. And we are doing some very bizarre things that I never even thought were possible along the way because of ChatGPT. Like, apparently, the world's biggest pistachio is somewhere along the way.
So wait, I'm like, what? Yeah. The world's biggest pistachio? How big is this? Why is it so big?
I got to go and find out, but it's in pistachio land. And yeah,
there's a pistachio land.
Yeah, it's a thing.
Where do you want to go?
That was one of the first things on my list. I'm like, oh, that's a thing. I'm in. Let's go.
I mean, do it for the plot.
Funny is like they grow pistachios and they're also a vineyard. And so I was like, oh, this sounds like an amazing afternoon.
Great. It's going to be wine and they're going to have badass snackiness.
Exactly. And they put you on a wagon and let you like drive around and look at stuff while you eat and drink. What else could be more fun, right?
Oh, my toddler has trained me to not be able to sleep in, which is just so rude. But so mm-hmm. I woke up like last weekend before John and asked ChatGPT, what exactly are black holes? I felt like an hour looking into black holes, and John woke up at like the reasonable time of 7 a.m. or something. And I was like, do you want to know what's inside a black hole? And he was like,
what the hole are we talking about?
Yeah. He was like, excuse me?
That is so funny. The other thing that I've been doing a lot as I'm planning for this trip is find me fun places to eat that also have good food, preferably award-winning food. And it's really pissed me off because there are some hallucinations, apparently, that these restaurants are still around, because I went to a couple of the websites. It's like permanently closed. I'm like, Jesus, that's why I didn't trust you, ChatGPT. Like, you would have led me off into the desert.
Yeah, you can put a setting in, and like, I've got mine that's like, please verify that all of this is accurate. Please, you know, double check your sources, whatever, whatever. And so I'll just be like, okay, run truth protocol.
Wait, you should always run truth protocol. Like,
I do.
What? No, but I'm just saying it should not be an optional setting that you have to go to. You know what? Just lie to me. Like, maybe I do want it to lie to me about something.
Yeah. Do I look good in these pants? Lie to me.
Do I look hot and young? Lie to me.
Lie to me. Is my Botox wearing off? Lie to me.
So funny.
You can change your protocols to be like Harry Potter spells. So instead
oh my God.
Of like, truth protocol, you could be like, Veritas serum. I like did this cool thing the other day where I put a couple of my thought pieces in that felt like me writing on my best day. Mm-hmm. And then was like, okay, what is my style? Like, help me understand what my writing style is. Great. Okay. Now help me develop editing checklist for you when I drop a bunch of drivel in here and ask you to magic it into something worth reading. I want you to apply my specific, unique editing protocol.
And so did it give your style a name?
No, but I should ask it to.
Yeah, I want to know what it's called. It's like you have your own font.
Right? But the other thing I do is I've asked it to build out like specific admin blocks on my calendar every week. So I've got one for like clearing miscellaneous tasks out of my inbox, like another one for processing all of my notes, another one for getting up to date on industry gossip, mm-hmm. for lack of a better word. And I asked it to come up with like cool names for each of those things. So it's like, I've got my Sparkle Hour and the Forge and like other things like that. So my calendar just looks like totally nuts.
Is anybody at work like, what is going on with Angie? She's got something sparkling for an hour every day.
Nobody's asked. No one's asked. What a beautiful transition segue to why any of this stuff matters. Any of this AI discussion, anything, any of the words that we're saying to you today, why do you care? Well, by the end of this episode, we hope that you will understand something that nobody in the legal industry is really saying out loud yet. You are not actually afraid of AI. You're afraid of losing a part of your professional identity, the part that you built plank by painful plank over the years that helped you become fast and knowledgeable and in the end, indispensable. And AI kind of challenges all of that. So today, Bree and I, we are going to unpack the fear, the overwhelm, the economic shift that is already reshaping legal work, whether you've ever touched a prompt or not. And most importantly, we're going to show you, we're going to list some of the like small practical steps that we're going to keep you confident, keep you relevant, and keep you ahead of the curve as this AI specter proliferates.
So we're going to talk about things like this common theme. I'm afraid. I think I'm behind. Like I secretly down deep underneath it all, I feel like I don't really know what's going on. And I'm afraid to say that out loud because I feel like I'm behind. And frankly, it just all overwhelms me. You are probably more the norm than you think is the spoiler alert there. So we'll be talking a little bit about that. Also, what's underneath that fear? What drives it? What's it mean really at the end of the day for how it's going to change our jobs or change how we work with one another and what we can expect from technology, what we can expect from ourselves and what we will have to adapt to. Now that we've kind of talked a little bit about what's underneath the covers and gotten the weird part out of the way, maybe we should talk about how we're all a little bit in denial, should I say, Angie?
Maybe a bit, yeah. I think that that's sort of like denial of what we are actually afraid of when it comes to AI. I mean, Bree, what do you think? If we're being super honest here, what are legal teams actually afraid of when it comes to AI?
I mean, I think the thing I hear the most is that they're afraid that AI is going to take over their jobs. That's the A number one thing. And then I think if you don't think that AI is going to take over your job, you are afraid that you are going to fail at learning something new that you're not going to understand. And then you're going to be replaced for somebody else that does understand it. I think those are probably the two most common fears that I hear. And then I think there's a lot of like sub-level fears. I mean, you've got, you know, vendors who are making money doing things the old-fashioned way versus vendors that are going to adopt AI and technology and do it better, faster, stronger, and more accurately. And so there's that race that's going on underneath the covers. So there's some fears there if you're in technology or if you're in the vendor sector. There's fears for folks that are out there making money doing document review. And that's what they've done for the last 20 years to make money. And now they're like, well, holy crapola, what am I going to do now? Or you've got people that do more administrative type tasks at work and they're like, oh gosh, I was super comfortable. Now I got to like really get outside of my box and think about how I'm going to apply AI to do better at what I do. And I think when it comes down to it, all humans are very different and all humans have varying tolerances for change. But really, we all cling to something comfortable. And I mean, I do prefer a lot of change and I need it to not feel like I want to stab myself in the eyeballs with a pencil. Like I do. But there are certain things that I do not want to have change. Like, please do not change the recipe of the Texas sheet cake that is my favorite cake in the whole wide world. And I want it for my birthday with cinnamon, people. It has cinnamon in it. Don't sell me a Texas sheet cake without cinnamon.
What is
it? It makes
Texas
me so
cake?
Mad. Oh, it's the most delicious cake in the whole wide world. It's like a chocolate cake with like a fudge icing. And yes, it has pecans because it's from Texas and there's cinnamon in it. Like there is a way to do this and I don't want to change it like ever. But no, I mean, go back to AI. I think people are afraid of change just generally speaking. We want our safety blanket. We want to know that we can do something well every day and feel proud of ourselves.
I think it's a really good point because I don't like to deal with things that freak me out. I don't like to look at my credit card bill after I spend an exorbitant amount on skincare products. You know, I don't like to look directly at the sun. And so sometimes AI can feel that way. You know, it's this, plus there's just like stuff everywhere about if you haven't already mastered this, then you're behind, you're a laggard, and you are dumb. And when it comes to something as, you know, integral as your livelihood, which like you said, you know, we all derive a little bit of confidence or self-worth from that. you know, that's really scary. And so I feel like when I'm talking to people about AI, I'll sometimes see them get this sort of like deer in the headlights look. And I get it. I mean, there are a million and one tools out there. Everybody's talking about it. And it feels like if you weren't there from day one, then you're screwed. And honestly, this is sort of why we do this podcast, right? Is eDiscovery can kind of feel that way too. And so we wanted to bring this to people at like a level that doesn't feel so exclusive. I hope we can do that in this episode of AI. You know, I saw a really interesting article today about Meta. Meta has a mandate that employees must begin using AI, and they're starting to include AI usage on their employees' performance reviews. Mm-hmm. And there was an article today about how that disproportionately affects women. And the idea was basically like, women tend to suffer from imposter syndrome far more acutely than men do. And so when we layer that imposter syndrome on top of on this AI problem, then it starts to disproportionately affect women. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I'm probably the wrong person to ask about this. I don't see it as a gender issue. And I, especially as we have younger women in moving into the field who have been parts of generations where girls and women are more encouraged to get involved with technology and math and science, certainly more than I was. But I think that if somebody wants to, whether they're a female or a male, they can have success. The place I see bias, though, is more on an executive level or decision maker level in a company, because I think people are more prone to trust men and trust their guidance or leadership than they are to trust women inherently. I do see it that way.
There's been like tons of research about that.
Yeah.
Well, I do think that the comment about the linkage between imposter syndrome and using AI, I think that there's some gold to mine there. Like,
well, I mean, I do think that that is true in terms of people who have imposter syndrome, but I do not think that it's unique to women. I think you also have to think about minorities in that same vein, because yeah. I mean, that's the whole reason why, you know, we had the Conexion Legal Tech event in Houston recently to help promote Latins in our industry, because, you know, there is a disproportionate amount of Latin Americans that are in eDiscovery, especially in Houston, Texas, in a city where you have 44% of your folks are Hispanic. You would think that your industry would reflect that, and certainly it does not, and certainly not at the executive level.
Okay, let me ask you this. So something I've been thinking about lately is these AI tools where there's like a cost per query type of a model. That feels really intimidating to me because I don't want to spend money on a shitty query. And I don't always trust myself to be, you know, the most adept at crafting a query, right? Like, I just fuck around on ChatGPT and ask it things over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
I think it's a really interesting thing because I happen to work for a software company that is also trying to decide, you know, how do we bill for AI? And right now, the concept is, for eDiscovery anyway, that we're billing by the size of data that you run AI against. You know, like, hey, you've got 1 terabyte, we'll bill you for 1 terabyte of usage. Run all the prompts or queries you want, but you can only have it on this terabyte, right? Mm-hmm. But then you've got ChatGPT and other AI systems out there that are charging, like you said, by the prompt. I think all of it, the fundamental deal with all of it is that you want to have extremely amazing and accurate prompting. And I think that the folks that are making
a
living,
high bar.
is a super high bar, and it's a science in some ways, but it's also not that far away from being very crafty with Boolean searching and that sort of thing. So understanding the result of your prompting is something that's very, very crucial for folks that are doing document review now. And I think that instead of spending time reading documents and is it privileged? Yes. Is it responsive? No. Like, whatever. There's going to be more time spent on crafting those prompts.
It's been such a long time since I've done doc review, and you said that, and I had like a visceral like,
I know, makes you want to drink heavily. I get
uh-huh.
it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. So you and I are both having this reaction to document review, like, ugh, I never want to do that again. Why? Because it's super repetitive. It's super mind numbing. it's also very inconsistent. I mean, how many times were you like, wait, did I say that that was responsive the last time? And now I'm saying it's not responsive? Or did I, like, wait, should I also code it with this other code? Huh, let me go back. And then we have to QC it 50,000 million times. And then all these inconsistencies, like all of it just makes you pull your hair out. Because it's almost impossible to have like a crisp, clean, consistent, accurate document review, like 100%. I mean, there's going
to
be...
Yeah. I mean, and then it's like, oh shit, let me add this label. Oh, no, I have to go all the way back through my data set.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. And so those folks like me and you who are frustrated and hate doing that and never want to do it again should likely love AI and embrace it, because now you have more accuracy and consistency that you can work with. And then you can actually use your brain cells to do more important things. All right. So let's get back to basics with maybe we're in a corporation, maybe we're in a law firm, we're a legal team or e-discovery team, legal ops team. We have to deal with e-discovery issues, right? Document review. What is the first holy crap moment when we're like, you guys, we are so far behind with AI, like somebody seriously got to get a leg up on this. Like, we're going to get left behind in the dust. What does that look like? And who's going down? Who's getting tasked with that?
I almost think it's going to be one of a handful of things. Like, I almost wonder if law firms are going to start feeling it when they start assessing their revenue bleed, and they start noticing how much of that is attributable to clients writing down their billable hours because they've spent an excessive amount of time on something that once that was a reasonable amount of time to spend on it, right? But now you've got AI in the mix and now it's not. So I think that that's going to be one of the indicators. I think also just like things that can happen in litigation. You get sanctioned for spoliating evidence. You don't find the smoking gun, but AI could have. You're trying to recover your fees and costs and judges asked you to justify that. And so you submit your timesheets and the judge is like, this isn't reasonable. So I think those things are going to kind of trigger law firms. I also think there's just a lot of like kind of societal pressure. Everybody wants to be cutting edge. Everybody wants to work somewhere that is at the forefront of this. And I think you're going to find places that drag their feet, organizations that drag their feet, struggling to retain their most innovative talent. And I think that at a certain point, losing that kind of talent will affect client relationships. And then that will be kind of a nudge in that direction too. Competitor pressure too, right? If your biggest competitor is super AI forward, they're all up in that space, they're touting their AI mastery everywhere you look, then I think you're going to start to see, you know, one domino falls and then other industry dominoes fall. What do you think?
No, I agree with everything that you just said. I'm like, yes. And I would also say when you're in litigation, you're doing the initial ESI protocol. What should we include and what should we not? What are the expectations? What are reasonable? That's going to be a place where it kind of comes to bite you in the butt if you're behind, because opposing parties or even your co-counsel or co-defendants will be like, no, we have this capability. Why do you not? We're not willing to do it old school because that's absolutely a waste of money and time. And so, you know, get up to speed, bruh. And then I think you're going to have judges that are going to eventually say, this is ridiculous that you are not utilizing things that are out there that everybody else is using. Doug, get on board. Don't come back to me again with your nonsense until you've done it kind of thing. So I think there's going to be that. I think that's going to be the last one, though. I mean, it seems like case law and judges are usually the last straw. And then I think clients are going to drive that. Like, I'm not going to go hire a counsel that's going to be like, oh, it's going to take me 5 years to review your data. I'm like, bro, no, because I'm going to go down the street to somebody else that can run AI through it real quick. Mm-hmm. And I can get in and out, you know. So I do think that there's going to be that.
You know where else I think we might see this happening? It might be less end of the case judicial rulings and more when the judge sets the case schedule. Yeah. They might collapse that discovery period in a case schedule from a year to, say, 4 months. Right. Like, well, your doc review should only take 2 weeks, you know? And so I think we'll see, and you just can't do that under a traditional model. It's impossible. And that will force people into the AI realm.
Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting too, like when we start trying to debate the ESI protocol or the discovery orders in a matter, and we start getting down to prompting. I mean, I know you've seen it, and I know I have seen it as well, where with these Boolean searches, people can go freaking nuts and lose their mind over the granularity with I want you to find these 10 different words with all the wild cards possible within 5 characters, and then within 10 words, and then within this date range, and then what? And then I want you to do this like times 1,000, then change one word each time. What? Oh my God. Like, this makes me want to bash my head into the wall.
Yeah.
But people can get crazy about this stuff. And I think with AI, it's going to be similar. But first, we need to, as an industry, come up with some common, you know, ways of talking about AI, which I think is still not yet established. Saying run this through AI, what do you mean? Like, are we using, like, yeah, are we using AI that's been around for a million years, like language learning models, or are we using agentic AI? How many agents are we talking? Is it open AI? Like, I mean, there's a lot of flavors of AI. You can't just say, run AI on it. Right. Like, I don't, what do you mean?
So I tried to do something yesterday, I think, and it went very poorly. And I need to figure out how to get better at this with AI. I asked AI to impersonate, because I wanted to like refine my thinking on something. And so I asked AI to impersonate, you know, a partner at a law firm, a chief legal officer and a chief financial officer at a corporation, a Gen Z associate at a law firm, somebody from the vendor side, and then somebody like a business stakeholder, and debate, you know, this specific issue. And I swear, ChatGPT is like, what do law firm partners do on TV? Great, that's how they are in real life. And so the results I got were so bad because of that. And I was like, wait, I set really bad guardrails when I tried to use AI right there. You know, I should have given it more direction, set better guardrails, and I think I would have gotten a better output.
I mean, and like, what has trained that AI to,
right?
You know what I mean? There's not a whole lot of examples of success and, you know, repeated workflows and things like that. People are still hashing all of that out.
Right.
Yeah.
Can we talk about billable hours?
Oh, God. You really do want me to drink heavily, don't you?
You know what? I do. I'm trying to just influence you sort of obliquely.
Well, we know billable hours are going to change when AI comes into the loop. And, you know, it's so funny. One of my first jobs ever, and I've like, honestly, I've been always wanting to follow up with this dude, but I'm also scared to look him up. He's probably in jail somewhere. But there is this brand new associate that I
can't wait to hear where you're going with this.
Oh, God, there's so many stories there, but I can't tell all of them. So he's brand new associate. He's trying to learn, like, I don't even know how to breathe. But anyway, I remember going into his office and he was holding papers in his hand, kind of weighing them in the air. And I'm like, what are you doing? And it's like he took them out of his inbox and he just started weighing them. And he's like, I don't know. I think 1.5. Yeah, that sounds good. And then he would take another stack and he's like, I think like, I don't know, 2.8. And I'm like, is this how you bill? You're weighing your papers. Like, you're not even reviewing them or actually spending time. Whoa. You are weighing them. Like, bro, that is so unethical. Like, you cannot do that. I say that as a joke, but there's a lot of gray area with billable hours, and less so now than there used to be. But AI is going to be is going to take us to another level. No longer are we expected to read every line of every letter or every, you know, page of every article or every piece of data and every document review. We're going to be expected to run AI against it, but we're going to have to prove up, you know, how did we come to this billable hour amount? And I think that audit trail is also very similar to the audit trail that we're going to have to prove up when we use evidence in the courtroom, which is another topic altogether. But the whole validation step with both of those, I think, becomes really relevant. You know, as a client, I want you to prove up like what you actually did and what I'm paying for. Otherwise, I can run that through ChatGPT myself. I don't know. What do you think? I mean, you're an attorney. You've built plenty of millions of hours yourself.
Not millions. Well, I mean, okay. I think I want to level set by acknowledging that people have been crying wolf about the death of the billable hour for, I don't know, 20 years. And to me, that speaks to like, who's actually satisfied with that model? Not very many people. And I think that AI will change this, right? So what was it, like 2010 or something? There was this whole study, Bloomberg came out with a study, and they were like, listen, we predict that in the next year, 25% of legal matters are going to be governed by alternative fee arrangements or AFAs. And that did not prove true. Like, I think today, maybe 10% of matters are governed by AFAs. I think that the reason we don't see more AFAs, or one of the main reasons, is that nobody's really wrangled their data effectively on the, you know, corporate side or the law firm side to decide, okay, historically, over the last 3 years, this kind of matter in this jurisdiction, we have billed, you know, X number of hours on this type of case. Well, now we have AI. And AI can pretty clearly tell us, okay, they can give us that information. And so I think we're going to see this greater push for AFAs because of the way that AI can manage our data.
If I'm listening and I don't know what you mean by AFAs, could you explain that to me?
Yes, I can, Brie. An alternative fee arrangement, or AFA, is a way of billing for a specific amount of work. So instead of a lawyer saying, all right, I will take on this, let's call it a slip and fall. So I think this is going to be one of the areas we're going to see this. I will take the slip and fall case and I will bill you $500 an hour to litigate it for you. Instead of that, the law firm would say, I will take the slip and fall case. I will charge you a flat fee of $50,000 to litigate this. And then it's like up to me, the lawyer, to do that in the most efficient way possible to make a profit. You can also do AFAs not on a matter-wide basis, but on like a block of work basis. So for example, if you are Walmart and you get a lot of slip and falls, and you know that and you do the same thing every time you get one of those cases, you have a workflow to investigate the matter. Well, you could start asking your law firms to just do an AFA and say, like, for that block of work, we will pay you $5,000 each time. And that is great. I think these are really interesting because there's a lot of cost predictability for the client, which is lovely, but it forces lawyers to do something that is sort of antithetical to the way that they practice law, which is be fucking efficient. When you're doing like a billable hour model, there's this sort of perverse incentive to bill more time. And so AFAs are a really cool way of managing that. But I've seen them fall apart time and time again because the law firm did not accurately budget their hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see these fights between clients and their law firms. They're like, well, this was outside the scope of our AFA. Mm-hmm. And this was inside the scope, and blah, blah, blah. And so I feel like they've got this tendency to fall apart because of cost projections. And I wonder the ways that AI will make cost projections more reliable and accurate.
Yes.
Driving up the prevalence of AFAs.
I mean, that has to be the way that we're moving. We have got to get away from the billable hour. I mean, it's ridiculous, first of all. But second of all,
oh my God,
there's so many algorithms and agentic AI, whatever, however you want to go about it, that you should be able to plug in and be like, hey, this is the jurisdiction, these are the people involved, this is whatever. There has to be a way of structuring that payment plan too, of like, if it falls outside of the scope, if something new develops, like then we get to readjust and, you know, whatever, to protect either the legal service provider or the firm from being taken advantage of because of the for the new evidence or whatever else becomes involved. But yeah, I mean, I think the billable hour model will be going bye-bye, which is great. Honestly, I think for everybody. I mean, it's one of the reasons why people don't want to ever go work for a law firm again. They're like, oh,
no, it's
fucking
have you
ever had to bill for your hours? It's like, today I woke up and I went to the bathroom, 0.5. I mean, it's like, if you had to take every little thing.
What were you doing in the bathroom? Well, and when I was on billable hours, I mean, because you're billing in 0.1, so 6-minute increments. And I started measuring my entire life in 6-minute increments, where I would like miss a light driving somewhere and I'd be like, fuck, that's 0.1. You know, and it was just, it's just a miserable way to live.
Yes.
I also wonder if we're going to see like a generational push to get rid of it, because I feel like people kind of my vintage, so like millennials and younger, are like, this is terrible. I don't want to do this.
What were these people thinking?
But the one thing I also wonder how insurance will factor into this, like whether insurance will drive a reshaping of our norms. And I guess what I mean by that is like insurance companies. So if you are insured and you get sued, your insurance company might insist on hiring what's called a panel counsel, which is somebody that has a relationship with that insurer to provide services at a specific rate. Typically, those lawyers charge less money than if you were to go and like hire your own law firm, for reasons that aren't like important here. But I wonder if we'll start seeing insurance companies, for cost predictability reasons, insisting that they're panel counsel perform work on AFAs.
Why not?
Right. Especially for types of litigation that are pretty rote or like repeat litigation. your slip and falls, your contract disputes, your, you know, whatever, things that just are a constant docket for these companies, why wouldn't you go with an AFA?
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree with you. And I mean, I hope for everybody's sake that it changes, because it's better for the person who's actually doing the work. It's also better for the customer to understand, like, because the worst thing for the customer is like, hey, I think it's going to take us 60 hours to do fill in the blank. And then it becomes like 600 instead. You're like, wow, we are completely out of our budget now. I think that people are going to demand and expect it, because there's no reason why we should not be able to have algorithms and AI in place to be able to predict, you know, the cost of whatever that work is.
Well, typically you would perform an AFA under an agreement, and that agreement would specify like what falls under the AFA and what doesn't.
Speaking of the future.
Ooh.
I mean, let's look forward to, I don't know, like maybe should we go all the way to like 2028?
Let's do it.
What happens then? I mean, that's what, 3 years from now?
Yeah.
So what does the world look like? What should we expect? What do you predict? I mean, neither one of us has a crystal ball. We just have our own speculations. But
honestly, I think we're going to see the rise, more so than we have already, of legal ops. And I will tell you how I got there. I'll show you my work. I'll do my loan division. So those are the people who are your legal team data wizards, right? And so they know what costs you are incurring. They know what levers to pull to decrease those costs. And I think we're going to see them become super prevalent in managing outside counsel. What do you think?
Yeah.
What are your predictions?
I mean, I think there's going to be a high expectation of AI usage, meaning, hey, we've got this matter of discrimination. Here's my employee's mailbox. Here's all their Teams groups. Here's all their SharePoint sites. Here's all the data that we knew that they had. Here's the person that they're accusing. It's 500 gigabytes. Run AI through it and tell me what the output is. It's going to be kind of like early case assessment in a way, but like super, super duper efficient.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, yes, you should be concerned. No, you shouldn't be concerned. Or I don't know, we should look deeper. I mean, you're going to expect like a very quick return on, are there any red flags? Should we proceed? And, you know, instead of taking weeks like it does now, a lot of times when you're in-house, you'll get it in the same day. You know,
yeah.
And it'll be a very rote, repetitive process. And hopefully across our industry, if we're smart, we'll have a consistent way of handling that as vendors or software providers, because we'll all understand. I mean, this is the same problem. Every company has exactly the same problem.
Yeah.
Somebody was a whistleblower, somebody stole something, And these are all the things that nobody wants to spend any money on. You know, it's not like a huge litigation where you're like, oh, dang, we're getting sued because the thing we created like blew up in our faces and now people are hurt. Like, that's a big thing. And we're going to spend a lot of time figuring out who's responsible for what. Little things like proactive processes. Hey, you know, Angie is head of sales and she left for a competitor. I have a rote procedure now and a protocol that I run her data through whatever prompting, because I need to make sure that she didn't go crazy and take any of our shit with her while on her way out the door. I mean, I know she didn't, but just in case.
But do you though?
exactly.
One thing, well, I read an article about this. I thought it was so interesting and I want your thoughts on it. I think that we, and I'm sort of persuaded by this, but I think we're going to see almost a flattening of expertise. And what I mean by that is right now, when you assemble a team at a law firm, you will have like your paralegal, your associate, your partner would be like the typical structure. But I think what we're going to see is instead of that, we will have, we'll still have like a partner who's the buck stops with them, but then we'll have the ESI specialist, the AI prompt specialist, the, you know, specific data type specialist, you know, things like that. Like, I think we're going to start seeing more specialty areas.
Yeah.
And my hope for the legal industry is that that will generate like a little bit more respect for some of these parts of the profession that I feel like are unsung heroes. Paralegals being a great example. I feel like often, you know, paralegals and administrative assistants and things like that, like their work, I don't know if you feel the same way, but I feel like their work is sometimes sort of not valued the way that it should be.
Absolutely not, ever.
But I hope that, you know, if we start seeing these areas of specialty develop, and I hope that people will kind of get the recognition that they deserve.
I would love for that to happen. I mean, for years, though, to be honest, like the fact that people knew that they needed technology, but didn't, and I say people, the fact that attorneys knew they needed technology, but did not have an interest or the know-how to do it, actually empowered paralegals, because we're like, hey, we can do it, motherfuckers. Like, come over here. I'll fix your stuff. I'll get your database. I will do all the things at the vendor, and I'll take care of all that for you. And guess what? Now we're making more money than you. You know, it's like those kinds of steps in our industry actually empowered the paralegals that were willing to jump in and take it and,
yes,
and wrangle it. I think that there's going to be a change, though, in terms of expectation of your associates and of every paralegal, too. Like, right now in paralegal school or law school, e-discovery is kind of like a optional elective. You don't have to take it. You don't have to become an e-discovery expert or even know anything about e-discovery to graduate from law school or paralegal school, for that matter. It's more of an option. Like, do you want to go in that direction? I think it's going to become mandatory, because no matter what form of law you become involved in, we are specifically talking about litigation because we are very e-discovery centric. But think about AI in terms of like bankruptcy and like all the calculations and all the things that go into that, you know, or into contracts. If you're doing contract specific litigation, then you're going to have AI analyzing contracts and stuff like that. I mean, AI is going to literally take a role in every single aspect of law. So I think it's going to be a requirement to have to learn it before you graduate. And same with paralegals. And no matter what you decide, if you're going to go into a state law or whatever, you can still use AI to help you be more efficient and to help you be more efficient, not only for your own good, but also for your clients. So I feel like it's going to be more of a requirement than an option. I don't know that the titles will change so much. I don't know. I mean, I like the idea of the titles changing and giving more people opportunity, but I don't know. That's the whole associate, partner, counsel, whatever. Like, those are,
yeah.
I think it's going to take a minute for that to really change.
I bet you're right, especially because changing any of that will threaten the people at the top the most. And the,
yes.
You know, so
yeah.
The other thing I wonder if we'll see, and this is maybe like a crazy idea, but I wonder if we will see litigation firms and e-discovery vendors merging a little bit more or forming like closer partnerships.
I mean, I do. So one thing, and being part of the whole, I mean, I do work for a software company, but we're not necessarily a legal service provider, but we kind of get put in that same vein. The one thing that I do hope that happens is that we have more consistency across our businesses, so that we're offering people what's fair and most up to date and most efficient, and that we have standards that are consistent with one another. One thing that I think is really hard now is that certain companies will call certain things different words or different concepts, and it gets real confusing to the consumer. Like, well, I don't know. I mean, this company's calling it this, and this company's calling it that, and the other place is calling it whatever. Who's really doing it which way, and what does it really mean to me? And I don't have time for this. Like, nobody has time to like figure all this out. I really would like to see more consistency there. And I think AI really will demand that a little bit more. And I think it's going to hold us all up to a different standard. I'm wondering, honestly, how much of our industry is going to just kind of meld together, and mm-hmm. there will be less of us competing out there and more people working together. I don't know, but that's kind of what I could see, because I could also see us, getting more involved with information governance and other areas of technology outside of litigation and e-discovery. So I don't know. It's going to be very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Moving forward.
Okay. So for the people out there who are feeling really AI intimidated, what do you think is one thing they could do today to jumpstart their AI journey?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we talked a lot about people being scared and being afraid of things that are not comfortable. And Angie and I joke around a lot about how we use AI and the things we ask ChatGPT. But really, that's a way to get started in a very like non-threatening way. It's free. get on there and start doing things. I will give you some ideas that I've used that I think are pretty cool. Angie is probably, we don't even have enough time for all her ideas because she has amazing ones. You know, if I'm trying to put together an agenda, an itinerary, like these things that take a lot of tedious administrative time, and I could simply like, and I can even dictate, I don't even have to type it out. I mean, now that we can like dictate into our computers, I sound like an old person. We can dictate into our computers. And I can say, hey, I need to create an agenda for an e-discovery protocol meeting. And I need to include this, that, and the other. It's going to take place on December the whatever at this time. And these are the people that are going to be there. Please put it together. I literally can get that in a minute. And that's amazing to me. And coming up with things like that, you could do it for Christmas or whatever holiday you celebrate or whatever you're thankful for or whatever. Do it for your family. Like, if one thing I want to do for during the holidays is to play reindeer games with my kid and all of his friends. Put together a whole agenda of a bunch of reindeer games and give them times and whatever and execute it. What do you think, Angie?
I would say go into ChatGPT, open the window, say, I am a blank. I do blank. I want to do blank. How do I get there? So, for example, I am a mom of a toddler. I need to plan lunches for next week. My kid is in an outdoor preschool. She doesn't have a refrigerator. Can you help me come up with a meal plan? How do I do that? How do I use you to do that? Insert anything else. But that's how I would start.
Yeah. Start simple. Start small.
Yep. Okay, folks. That is all the time we have today. Thank you so much for joining us on eDiscovery Chicks. We hope you learned something new, felt empowered, or just had some fun. Please join the flock by following us on LinkedIn and Instagram and check out our website, ediscoverychicks.com. If you loved this episode, share it with your network, leave us a review, or tag us on our socials. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode.
Bye.
Bye.
The views we've expressed today are the eDiscovery Chicks views and don't necessarily represent the views of our employers, partners, or clients. The podcast is available solely for educational purposes to provide general information about eDiscovery principles and not to provide legal advice to any specific situation. It is not a substitute for legal advice from a lawyer you retained or who has agreed to represent you.